You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
You're listening to Comedy Central.
Here, the United States and Central America and the making of a crisis. Please welcome to the program, Jonathan Blitzer. Sir! Sir, thank you for joining us. First things first, what are you doing to me? I have a family, I have a life. This is a very long book.
You don't have to read the notes. The end notes.
Oh, I didn't have to read the whole.
No, that's fine.
Oh, son of a bitch.
Yeah, yeah.
What an incredibly thorough documentation of the causes of the immigration crisis, the discussions that have been going on through multiple administrations. In your mind, what has us trapped in this sort of Sisyphean nightmare?
Yeah. I mean, for years and years, we've watched kind of in this loop as politicians in Washington say, we can't pass comprehensive immigration reform because of the situation at the border. And yet, the situation at the border is in a state of chaos because we have not passed comprehensive immigration reform. And as a result, the asylum system at the southern border has borne the brunt of the otherwise failing system. And so we're stuck in this loop where lawmakers in Washington point to the border to justify their inaction, and the border is in the state of chaos that it is because of inaction in Washington.
Right. I almost never hear politicians talking about how many people can you absorb? I mean, when you tell me there's going to be 2 million people coming through the southern border and they are just, you know, being kind of logged and released, that sounds utterly chaotic and a recipe for disaster. But how many people can this country absorb? What do we need for economic growth? What is a better system? I feel like we never talk about that. We just react to images of chaos.
Absolutely. I mean, we can't talk about one aspect of the immigration system without view of the other. And so, you know, if we're only ever talking about the southern border, we're missing the
right
entire kind of picture that we need to better understand. But just as an example, you know, right now, and you don't have to take my word for it. I mean,
No, I do.
You should don't.
You're the only one.
Until you read the footnotes. You know, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, you know, economists across the country, everyone is pointing to the fact that, you know, immigrant labor has essentially kept this country's economy afloat following the COVID years. And so, you know, this is the engine of growth. The population
now,
is getting older.
That immigrant labor can be more easily exploited, is paid less, starts to depress wages for a lot of other people. Is that not accurate?
I don't think it is entirely. I think it's a
so
much
it's
murkier
somewhat
picture.
Accurate. reasonably accurate.
Well, until there are ways of absorbing an immigrant labor force legally into the country,
right,
there are always going to be opportunities for employers to exploit the undocumented and, in the process, to drive down working wages.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea is there needs to be a thoroughgoing reform of the system. And the problem is, of course, that in Washington, that's been dead on arrival now for decades. And so we're kind of in this doom loop where the border is the symbol of everything. But obviously, in a kind of commonsensical way, the only way to approach this broader problem is to deal with every aspect of the system.
This is where you drop us like a little drop of sunshine and you say, but here's the good news.
Yeah.
Go.
What's in here?
No!
I would say the good news is that from a policy perspective, mm-hmm. at least doing some of the things to relieve pressure at the southern border are no great mystery to lawmakers. I mean, the problem, of course, is the politics, but it doesn't require any great feat of the imagination.
This is not a complexity beyond the imagination of human beings.
Correct.
And we don't have to restabilize areas we destabilized to really get a handle on it. It's about fixing the system of influx.
I mean, I think, you know, overall, the only way to kind of deal with migration trends in the world is to understand the forces in a global context. And that means that the United States has to be more mindful of the consequences of its foreign policy. It has to work with partners in the region, you know, all very realistic
things.
I'm
sorry, I blacked out when you said, you said something about mindful foreign policy and...
Yeah, exactly.
I just started thinking about U2 in the sphere. I don't know what's going on now.
But I will say this, you know, one of the way, you know, reforming the asylum system specifically is a complex task, and I do think some hard decisions have to be made about kind of reckoning with the population of people showing up at the southern border right. and kind of understanding what the limits are of the asylum system as we know it. But before we get to a point of having to make these major sacrifices to a system that I think really should be a core part of American policy for right. ethical reasons and just for straight-ahead policy reasons.
Branding, for God's sakes.
To say nothing else. There are things that could be done, basic things like sending more money to the government to hire more asylum officers, more immigration judges. These things sound boring, they sound wonky, and very specifically, Republicans in Congress are trying to block these very straight-ahead basic measures from taking place, just basic funding measures, because they benefit from increased chaos at the southern border.
Right.
And so there are things that could be done that
so
would not,
until the
not
election,
a silver bullet.
You have, there's no hope until after the election. To even address any of it.
I mean, it's pretty overwhelming to see right now Republicans in Congress basically say, we're not going to touch this. I mean, they've said it explicitly. This
well,
isn't
saying
my interpretation.
This is the greatest danger to America, you know, maybe ever, and we're not going to do anything because we think it's a great issue. I mean, that's truly devious.
Yeah, and well, and the plot of that playing out was the administration, the Biden administration, went to Congress and said, we need more money to increase resources right. at the southern border. And
but they were slow on the uptick as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And there's plenty that the Biden administration could be faulted for. They go to Congress, they ask for money. That doesn't work because Republicans say, no, we want to see further changes to the asylum system as we know it. The administration goes to the negotiating table, makes a series of compromises that Democrats were not comfortable making years ago. I mean, pretty significant changes just in their own orientation in this conversation. Mm-hmm. And they finally broker this deal. I mean, this isn't just a Democratic effort. This is a bipartisan group in the Senate doing this.
Yeah.
Before the terms of the deal are even announced, you have Mitch McConnell saying to his Senate members, listen, you know, the politics of this, I think the phrase he used as it was reported, was the politics have changed. And the politics having changed were Trump came out against this negotiation.
Wow.
And so it was very clear, I mean, a very clear calculation was made
yeah.
that we benefit from the situation getting worse.
It's so tough because, you know, McConnell's usually so idealistic. It's just hard to see.
I was shocked.
It's shocking because you think, geez, self-serving politics. That's not the guy I know. Everyone who is gone is here. It's available. Jonathan Blitzer, we're going to take a quick break. Thank you so much.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Professor of Government at Harvard University. He is the co-author of two best-selling books, How Democracies Die and Tyranny of the Minority. Please welcome to the program Stephen Levitsky. Sir! How are you? Let's go! Tyranny of the Minority. Look at this. Look at this bad boy. The book is called The Tyranny of the Minority. You wrote How Democracies Die, a recipe to kill our democracy. And now Tyranny of the Minority. What is Tyranny of the Minority about?
Well, when we wrote How Democracies Die many years ago now, before it seemed so imminent to so many Americans that democracy was in danger, we wanted to write a book that described for Americans what it looks like when a democracy gets into trouble. I studied Latin America. My co-author Daniel studies Europe in the interwar period. So we've seen democracies get in trouble, we've seen democracies die, and we wanted to describe to Americans what this looked like so they would be warned. After we wrote the book, we got a lot of questions about what the hell do we do? How do we get out of this mess? And so the book is an effort, first of all, to better understand how we got into this mess, but also to think a bit about how to get out.
So when you talk about how we get into the mess, the Constitution is really our, touchstone. Is that the document that actually got us into this mess?
The Constitution, I should say, is a brilliant document. It is the world's It is the world's oldest written constitution. It's done us a lot of good.
Yes.
But it is also part of the problem today. A majority of Americans support democracy. A majority of Americans support the really interesting experiment with multiracial democracy that we are evolving into in the 21st century. A majority of Americans every day since Donald Trump came down the golden escalator have opposed Trump. But we have a constitution that protects, that enables, and that empowers an authoritarian minority party. And that's a problem.
But isn't that the very nature of the Constitution was the contradiction at its when it was being written, all men are created equal. Black people are 3/5. I mean, it's a mathematical equation that, from the get-go, was absurd.
It was absurd. Now, in some fairness to the founders, the elites across the world were undemocratic in the 18th century. But over the course of 200-plus years, democracies across the world have gone about fixing the original sins of their country.
So you're saying that the Constitution was a balance between that ideal and the practicalities of, well, how do we let the southern states, who have less population, not be steamrolled by a pure democracy?
Right. It was a couple of things. First of all, it was a document created by people who feared democracy, who feared majority rule, because majority rule didn't exist in the world in the 18th century.
What did they think? If it wasn't kings, what did they think it was going to be?
They didn't know. They were in completely new terrain. There had never been a republic like this before. We'd never had an elected leader before. The Electoral College was a third choice. It wasn't Madison's first choice. Madison designed a system that would have looked more like Europe's parliamentary democracies.
Right.
That was shot down. A number of folks in the convention pushed for direct election of the president, which is what all other presidential democracies in the world today do. That got voted down.
Not even for a unitary executive. Didn't they push for the executive would be a panel, would be a group of individuals?
That was one suggestion. But so they were scrambling, right? They couldn't reach a majority, and they didn't know how to elect a president. So the Electoral College was an improvisation. It was an experiment.
Was it an improvisation to bring a compromise to the southern states? Is that because the
North
was more industrialized and the South and the smaller states?
Okay. Right. Look,
so this was the compromise to bring the Union together.
Yeah, I mean, this was a really tough problem, right? We had 13 colonies that were, and there was a fear that they would break apart, that there might be civil war, that there might be violence. The Articles of Confederation had failed miserably. And there was a real fear that if we didn't hang together, the Brits or the French would come in and make things very difficult for us. The whole project could be blown to bits. So these guys had to forge a compromise, and they made concessions that were imperfect. In fact, George Washington, let me just say this.
Yeah.
George Washington, just weeks after the Philadelphia Convention, wrote a letter to his nephew describing the Constitution as an imperfect document and saying that it would be up to future generations to improve upon it.
But do you think it's strange, then, that a lot of the Constitution really is a practical matter, sort of a pragmatic document that is very much nuts and bolts of how do we do this mechanically, logistically, and yet we infuse such almost religious dogma? We almost view the founders now in a kind of a fundamentalist way of it was spoken through them from God. It was they were absolutely sure this is scripture.
Right. We didn't always see it that way. For much of U.S. history, Americans, both politicians and American citizens of all types, have worked to make our system more democratic. The expansion of suffrage, the Reconstruction reforms, the Progressive Era reforms.
But oftentimes that was brought through violent upheaval. I mean, the Civil War is what brought that about, suffragette. Even the Vietnam War, when they lowered the voting age, if there hadn't have been the draft, if people hadn't gone to Vietnam, I don't think you would have seen the expansion of voting to 18-year-olds.
Constitutional reform is tough. It's costly. It takes work. But we've done it throughout our history. And it's really only the last 50 years, only in our lifetimes, that we've kind of stopped thinking about how to make our system more democratic. We stopped doing the work of improving our democracy.
Let me ask you, and this is a slightly different point then. You know, some may be it's the design of the Constitution that allows for rural states to have maybe an outsized influence, especially in the Senate, which is a relatively minoritarian body to begin with. One person can blue slip something that people can constantly stop things as one person. And that person is always Rand Paul. No. but is there also an issue that as the world changes so rapidly, is democracy foundationally an analog system? And that in an increasingly digital and fast world, it's unwieldy even in its best iteration. And is that what also gives a kind of shine to the idea of dictatorship or authoritarian principles where things can be mobilized more quickly, decisions can be made? You know, democracy is painstaking. It's a grind.
It is. And this is not the first time we've been around this bend, right? In a century ago, whether it was the Russian Revolution or the rise of fascism, during a period of dramatic change, industrialization, the entry into the modern era, people looked around and said, yeah, Stalin, that works better. Hitler, Mussolini, that
made the trains
better.
Run on time.
Turns out, in the long run, there are costs to dictatorship, and that dictatorships don't— they may shine for a while, but in the long run, you don't much like the results. So we always have to be, we've got old institutions, and we constantly have to be thinking about how to improve them. But the basic idea of electing our governments and electing our governments in a context in which we enjoy a wide range of individual liberties, I don't think that's outdated.
Right. That stays no matter what the kids say on, I'm going to say, Instagram.
I think the kids are kids get a bad rap sometimes. They are among our strongest defenders.
Well, you teach them in college, so you see them. I see them. I find them to be fascinating. You know, there's always that millennials this or later or whatever they're saying. I don't find that at all.
They're the ones who are going to save our emerging multiracial democracy.
They better. Somebody's got to. The Tyranny of the Minority. It's available right now. Stephen Levitsky, thank you so much for being here.
Explore more shows from the Daily Show podcast universe by searching The Daily Show wherever you get your podcasts. Watch The Daily Show weeknights at 11, 10 Central on Comedy Central and stream full episodes anytime on Paramount Plus.
This has been a Comedy Central podcast.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.